Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Hey everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman talking to you again on the Progressive Radio Network. Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Once again, we have the immense honor and opportunity to bring you the weekly Zoom call. This is the 35th, amazingly enough, 90-minute Zoom call on election protection. We are, of course, going to have a deep and detailed discussion of the ongoing fascist crisis in this country, but we're going to start with we do not want to lose track of the huge victories that we've won on election protection, especially in Georgia and very much under the radar screen in Michigan. We're joined by Jan Bandor from Michigan. We are then going to talk about a crisis this week in New York, where the state of New York is considering certifying some very, very bad election machines that we don't want. We are about universal hand-counted paper ballots delivered to all eligible voters. Bring them in. There's four ways to bring them in. You can mail them, put them in a drop box, take them to a voting center, or take them to the election board. We want them scanned. The John Brakey and Ray Lutz, two of the great experts on the scanning machines, are on the call, and they're regulars with us and mainstays of the election protection movement. We want money out of politics. We want gerrymandering ended, and certainly want to end the Electoral College, which is at the root of a lot of these problems that we've been facing. Had there not been Electoral College delegations, there would not have been a riot and an insurrection as we saw. Joel Siegel is my co-convener here, along with Mike Hirsch and Steve Caruso will be doing the engineering. Bob Fitrakis, others are part of the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition, and this is who we are. We're going to start, as I said, with Georgia, then Michigan. We're going to talk about the crisis in New York, and we're going to talk, and then we're going to talk about D.C., what happened there, and the great crisis that we face in this country. It's going to take us about 45 minutes to an hour to get there because we need to cover this basic nitty-gritty stuff about protecting our elections, and again to celebrate the incredible breakthroughs in Georgia and Michigan. So let's start with one of the, shall we say, perpetrators of this incredible victory in Georgia. One thing about Georgia we got to remember, we are a nonpartisan call, but I'm a historian, and people lose sight of the fact that this is Georgia we're talking about that has turned the Senate of the United States and will be sending for the first time in U.S. history a Black senator and, for God's sakes, a Jewish senator. It happened because of grassroots organizing. And at the vanguard of that has been the great Andrea Miller. Andrea, if you'll come on with us, please. You've been on calls before, but it's always tough to get you because you're so busy and we're honored by your presence. You'll be followed by Jan Bandor. If Ray McClendon joins us from the Atlanta NAACP, he's welcome to jump in as well. So Andrea, I would love for you and Ray and the other grassroots organizers to write up a document of exactly what you did in Georgia, but whatever you did, it worked. So please take some kudos from us and tell us what you think we know about what happened in Georgia this year.
Well, hey, Harvey, always delightful to see you. Our work in Georgia really began back in 2010 when Reverend Terrence Dix, who lives in Augusta, and I wrote a paper that we called The Southernization of America. And we basically said back in 2010 that if we didn't take certain steps, we would begin to see more states behave like Southern states, meaning they would begin experiencing the voter suppression that is standard for quote, southern states, as the southern states were turning red. So now come forward, basically 10 years, 2020 and 2021, we're looking at Georgia, where there is a very, very big progressive movement out of Atlanta, but it rarely leaves Atlanta. And then there's a very good size, strong progressive movement in Augusta, and the rest of Georgia is pretty much left to fend for itself. So what Center for Common Ground does is our specialty is we do outreach and turn out voters of color in rural areas of voter suppression states. And that means that while we use tools that many other organizations use, we use them in a very different way because we understand who the audience is. So when we do phone banking, we do not ever use dialers because one of the most important things we've learned about calling community of color voters is when we call, because we are not selling candidates, we are providing really critical information that they're going to need to be able to vote. We leave messages. So for the Georgia runoff election, we started making phone calls on November 6th, and we made 358,784 phone calls into the state of Georgia. Some of the initial calls, about 128,000, were voter registration calls, and all of the rest were GOTV calls. When we go to work in a state, our team makes it a point of knowing as much about the voting rules as the Board of Elections in that state. Our phone banking team has an attorney, and we are always prepared, and I have had to go toe-to-toe with Board of Election officials about the work that we are doing in Georgia and what is legal and what is not. So when, rather than pushing vote by mail, which is problematic for some of our voters, if the voters were healthy enough, we encourage them to bank their vote and go an early vote. One of the things we also do is we're a technology company, so we invent a lot of technology. There were, I don't know how many organizations texting into Georgia. One of the things that we did was we asked voters, were they going to early vote, vote by mail, or vote on election day? If they were going to vote early, we had a very tiny team of people. It was my executive assistant and one other person whose job was to track the early voting locations and literally watch them every day. And if a new one opened or one closed, to literally change our master list so that when people told us they were going to early vote, we could text them back the name, the address, and when their closest early voting location was going to be open and available. So what is critical, if you are going to work with voters of color, which is purely our constituency, we make sure, number one, we have information as good, if not better, than the Board of Elections, and we make sure we make that information available to voters. We ran phone banks on Monday and I believe Saturday, and we ran phone bank training on Monday and Saturday, and we ran state phone banks so that anybody could join our phone bank, even if you had never phone banked before. And we always had support people who were there and trainers who were there. So if you're going to work in elections, this is not a casual thing where you can just kind of slapdash give voters some information. You have to really be prepared to help voters vote, knowing they are going to encounter obstacles. We built a little app that included every drop box in the state of Georgia. So we had every early voting location, we had every drop box. It was all mapped and available just on a link that would automatically install on your cell phone. So phenomenal amount of work. We are getting ready. Virginia has her state elections in 2021. We're getting ready to go to work in Virginia. So Harvey, thanks a lot.
Well, thank you. There was a beautiful chat that the victories in Georgia were not for the Democratic Party. They were for voting rights and voter rights. And you and, yes. and Ray at the Atlanta NAACP. And we're also joined by Emily Levy. Emily, your scrutineers group played a tremendous role in this also. Can you tell us what scrutineers was about and how you interfaced with Andrea and with the NAACP? One of the great things that happened, and Ray talked about this last week, was that there was finally coordination, at least to a certain extent, between the voter rights groups in Georgia, so that there was a little less duplication of effort than there usually is. And one caller said that she was calling into Georgia and the people she talked to were annoyed because they'd been called so often. But there was some coordination. Emily Levy, I know you were part of this. Can you tell us quickly what scrutineers did and how you interfaced?
Well, it's interesting that you talk about there being less duplication of effort, because I interviewed a leader in Georgia for the Scrutineers podcast, Triana Arnold James, and she said that she, as a Georgia voter, was getting about 25 calls a day. Wow. From different get out the vote groups. And I actually wanted to ask Andrea whether you think there's any hope for getting groups to coordinate better in the future so that there is less overlap.
No, because there's money involved, so no.
Okay, there you go.
We'll have to get to the money people and have them help us coordinate then.
Right. I mean, we coordinated with Ray and Black Voters Matter. Again, most of the effort was concentrated in Atlanta. We did most of our work outside Atlanta. We were in the Georgia Black Belt. What we were looking at is helping counties, rather than being 80-20, getting them to 70-30 or 60-40. A few voters here, a few voters there. Georgia has 159 counties. There are roughly 12 counties that constitute Atlanta. So if all you do is work in Atlanta, you're missing most of Georgia.
Okay, really, really amazing. I want to recognize Christian Nunez. Christian is the head of the National Organization for Women. And Emily, did you have anything else you wanted to add before
Christian, thank you. Please. So what we were focused on was one specific thing, which was getting photos and or videos of the poll tapes that are posted, that are required by law in Georgia to be posted outside of polling places after close of polls. And those look like cash register tapes. They're the printout from the machines that tabulate the vote. And they're the earliest record we have of how people actually voted, and can become a very important piece of evidence if the later election results that are announced don't match them. So we had an effort where we actually hired people to go take those photos or videos, primarily videos, using the actual vote app developed by Democracy Counts, which is available in both the Google Play and Apple App Store. And we ended up getting, we still actually have videos coming in. We ended up getting a few hundred videos of different poll tapes. So this is the first time really trying to coordinate who's going where to do it and targeting where places it was particularly important. in primarily in communities of color. And so there's now an effort by Smart Elections, which Lulu may want to talk about, and Protect Our Votes, to analyze those, to actually do the comparison between the poll tapes and the official election results as a check on the voting machines. So that's
fantastically important. I know Ray Lutz and John Brakey have been deeply involved in that kind of thing, along with Susan Pinchon. Is there anything else, Emily?
I'd like to make room for other people to talk.
Okay,
I always have more I can say.
I want to thank you so much. Your work has been fantastic. After the inauguration, when we make sure we still have a country, we will get into this deeper, because this is the template we need for all elections going forward if we're going to have anything resembling a democracy. Christian Nunez, you are also part of this as head of the National Organization for Women. Do you want to say something? And then we're going to go to, I'll ask for questions about Georgia. Then we're going to go to Jan Bandor to talk about Michigan. And then we'll get, I just got a notice here that there have been public calls for armed demonstrations at all capitals in the United States. Christian, do you want to say something as we move through this?
Sure. I'll just speak really briefly about the work that we did to help in coalition with other groups. The National Organization for Women, we are the largest grassroots feminist organization in the nation. We've been around since 1966. And we do have a federal PAC, C3 and C4. But really what we wanted to do in this time is just really support the work of other organizations in Georgia that were doing the work. So we really work with NAACP, Ray, and a couple other coalition partners out there to really support the work that they were doing by coming along, phone banking, helping NAACP raise money, primarily just really getting out there. Our local chapter, Georgia, now really did a lot of the boots on the ground work for us by helping participate, doing lit drops for these organizations, and as well as just getting out there and being present on the ground for us. We rely heavily on our volunteers and our members to do the work for us, since we are grassroots. And just passing the word, putting membership notifications out to our members, encouraging them to donate, putting out blasts to our membership on our social media. We have about over 88,000 members with supporters. We have over 100,000 members. So we constantly send notifications out for an NAACP encouraging our members to support these organizations, putting blasts out for those things, encouraging phone banks. We also put some of the phone banks on our website and had our members participate in the phone banks. So we just did our part to be supportive in coalition and help our members be a part of those things. And we just encourage, and we continue to do those things as long as we can to provide support. And that's what we did as part of the National Organization for Women.
Well, thank you. It's great work you did in Georgia, and I'm sure it helped help turn the tide. And it's an honor to have you on here. Now, you're going to be very busy with defining these upcoming fascist coups. There's no doubt about that. Did anyone else want to jump in on Georgia before we move to Michigan real quick? Hetty Tripp in Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm in Minnesota, but just one point in Georgia, NAPOF actually hosted, NAPOF, National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum, a citizenship training program, multilingual interpretation in several Asian languages. So even before you vote, you have to be a citizen, right? And especially for immigrant groups, that's an important piece that needs to be done too. Thank you.
Thank you, Hetty. Your work also contributed greatly. There was also great contribution in Georgia from the indigenous community. Indigenous activists from all over the country called indigenous voters in Georgia and clearly made a difference. And that's something that's happened for the first time. I do want to keep Bill posted on ongoing news. The Democrats in the House of Representatives have filed an article of impeachment. It's like the football score is going underneath the screen here. And we will get to that as we move through. Okay, if there's nothing further on Georgia,
I do have a question.
Real quick, Art, please.
The question is based on, given all the false claims of vote rigging and everything that went on, is there anything that's developed since then from the progressive election integrity movement as embodied by people like Marilyn Marks that would lead from these very great activists who've talked about work they've done in Georgia on voter registration to try to get, you know, hand-marked paper ballots and get rid of the ballot marking devices for the next election?
Yes, is there any interest absolutely. In that? I mean, that's what this call and this series of calls is all about. And we will have, you know, we are going to have a coherent movement to win paper ballots and all the things that made what happened in Georgia possible, including getting rid of those Dominion machines, which we opposed in the first place. They shouldn't have been there. And not that it would have since. Well, anyway, so that's it. That's our focus. Our great question. And if we expect you to be a part of this movement. So moving forward. Okay.
One more question on Georgia.
Yeah.
Daniel Blackman, here, I'll put my screen on. Daniel Blackman, who ran for public service, he sent a email saying that that he heard from some people that his name was not on the ballot. Do we have any information on that?
I don't, but let's pursue it. For those of you who don't know, Daniel Blackman was actually the third candidate. Everybody was talking about the two Senate races in Georgia, but there was a third race. But thank you for bringing that up. For the Public Service Commission, we had Daniel on. He was the first African-American ever to run for the Public Service Commission. It was a big deal, in particular because the last two nuclear plants in the United States are going to be under the purview of the PSC, $30 billion, for God's sakes. And Daniel ran mostly a rural-based campaign. And although he allegedly did not win his own seat, I think he had a major impact on the outcome of what happened in Georgia, because he was campaigning on local issues, electric rates and broadband. And he probably brought out quite a few rural African-American voters. He probably got creamed in Atlanta, but nonetheless, I'm glad you brought that up. And I want to have him on a later call. He's a terrific guy, and we should find out more about what you're saying. If anybody has any information about him not being on the ballot, we have seen things like that before. It is a possibility. Thank you for bringing that up. Anyone else on Georgia? Harvey,
just really quick. Myla's been waiting, and everyone's been kind of hopping in and not raising hands.
Okay, so. Myla.
You know, that's okay. I actually had raised my hand again when Daniel Blackman came up, because I also received that email from him. And he is asking people, I've got it here. He's asking people, because he has been notified that he was not on certain ballots, that he wants people to spread the word that if they voted in Georgia and his name was not on the ballot, that to contact him. And he's asking for money, people to donate money to make sure that that the fight is fair. I'm sorry, I'm looking at it.
We will have him on next week. We had him on before the election. We'll have Daniel Blackman with us next week to talk about, if he can come, to talk about what happened in his race in Georgia, which I think had a big impact. Even though he lost, it definitely brought out rural voters.
And I agree, because exactly, he brought out rural voters. And so my hand was up previously about our other discussion, and I want to speak.
You'll be first when we get to it, okay?
Oh, how wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Anybody else before we go to Michigan here?
Yeah.
Real quick.
Yeah, on Blackman, I just wanted to illuminate a little further. I'm going to drop a tweet in here about the recount request, about the ballot search, and also about his fundraising, if I can find it, just to let you know.
All right, please. All right, so we'll have him back next week if he can do it. Good. Okay. All right, Jan Bendor in Michigan. Michigan was a sleeper here, but there were tremendous victories that your movement won in Michigan that we all need to know about. So can you tell us, please?
Thank you, Harvey. I don't know why we were a sleeper. We've been working for 4 years to recover from 2016, which was a wake up with the horrible turnout in our state that caused the disastrous results in that year. So right afterward, we got to work. We designed and succeeded in achieving two constitutional amendments voted in by voters. One of them to get rid of gerrymandering, which we're doing right now, and the other to provide voters with a whole Christmas tree of voting rights, including absentee voting for everyone. And that turned out this year to be absolutely revolutionary. It made an enormous difference. Just consider the numbers. In 2016, 4.8 Michiganders voted out of 7.5 million. That's not a very good turnout. In 2020, with no population increase, we're going to lose a congressional seat, actually, probably. We had turnout of 5.5 million. Okay, that's an enormous increase in turnout. And the most important area of Michigan that we brought out was Wayne County and the biggest city in the state, Detroit, which is in Wayne County. In 2016, Detroit came out less than 40%. And that's critical. If you don't get Detroit voters out, you might as well not bother with the election. In this year, we had almost 50% turnout in Detroit. And I think it was actually better, because the problem with that turnout figure is the dividend. The math is wrong there. So we had Election Day registration as well that really kicked up the numbers. So anyone could walk in on Election Day to their local clerk and get themselves registered and get a ballot and vote it. So those things were revolutionary, but they do no good if you don't make people aware of them. So we had our Voters Not Politicians, which was the group that led the way on the redistricting reform, made hundreds and hundreds of phone calls to voters to remind them that they had new rights to vote absentee or to vote in person early absentee, which many people hadn't even heard about. So that took a lot of voter education. In April, my organization, the Michigan Election Reform Alliance, started looking at, well, how are people going to take advantage of absentee voting? In a lot of our cities, people don't have cars and the mass transport is terrible. So how are they going to turn in their ballot? And we knew that the post office was under attack. So we decided we would go on a Dropbox campaign. And my organization made phone calls to 1,500 local clerks. This is cities and township clerks in Michigan. That's who runs elections, to find out if they had a Dropbox or if they wanted a Dropbox. And the results were pretty astounding, because most of them didn't have a real Dropbox. The city of Detroit, for 480,000 voters, did not have one Dropbox, not even in front of their headquarters. So we went about getting that remedied. We wrote the Secretary of State. We said, can you please set up a grant program using the CARES Act money so that these folks can help us implement safe voting from, you know, COVID? And they did. And we went to the Wayne County Board of Commissioners and we said, how about we level the playing field for African-American voters so that they have a way to get their ballots in? And of course, the Wayne County Board was thrilled. We helped them write a resolution. They passed the resolution to buy 100 new drop boxes for their county. The city of Detroit ended up with 31 instead of zero. So we put drop boxes everywhere. You'd run into a drop box at night if you didn't have your lights on. It seems like a real no-brainer kind of idea, but hello, when people don't have cars and the mass transportation sucks, this really worked. Now there's a figure that everybody knows about absentee voting, which is, you know, generally about a third of the people who get a ballot don't send it back. So we thought, well, what are we going to do about that? So about the middle of October, we had Mark Grebner, who's a genius at data, and we asked him, can you give us a list of the people that still have their ballots that haven't turned them back in? And of course, one of the problems was that the clerks were behind on scanning in the receiving of the ballots, so it was hard to get that really current. But he finally did it. He's a genius. And we ended up sending 10,000 postcards to young voters under 30, first-time voters or first-time absentee voters, to say, hey, the nearest drop box to your house is here. How about you take your ballot, fill it in, and take it to a drop box near you? Well, I think it worked because the turnout among young voters was astounding. And I think we did the right thing to get to that group because they're, of course, one of the lowest voting turnout groups around. And the city of Detroit really carried Michigan beautifully. The turnout was fantastic. We did several other things because you can't just rest on one approach. We sent a letter to all of the local clerks, all 1,500 of them, begging them not to use wireless connections of any kind, cell phone modems, any kind of modems. Please carry your results to your county clerk on the memory media that you have. And we didn't ask him for a response, but we did get responses. We got a response from a lot of local clerks who said, oh, hell, I would never do that. You know, I'm going to carry them in. We always have. We don't trust the internet. So that was great. And we were really afraid of the insecurity because some had been doing that very bad thing. We also, thanks to very late grant funding from Harvey and Bob, thank you guys very much.
You're welcome.
We set up our usual mirror monitors program, which we do every presidential election. And we set it up in 10 counties. And we recruited volunteers. This time we were able to pay them a small stipend to handle their gas and any parking tickets that they inevitably get. And so we were in 10 counties. We provided training online, and we offered to any volunteers from any party. We have 7 political parties in Michigan, and so we got Greens, we got Libertarians, and we said, here's the training, here's what we're looking for. And our training is entirely focused on election integrity and security. We're not really there for voter protection, but we often get involved in it. It's inevitable. But the other people who do this are only about voter protection, and they're not looking at the fact that people are applying to vote with pencils, which is totally illegal and stupid and doesn't, you know, it's not a good practice. We've done a whole lot over the years with this program. We started in 2006, and some of the communities where we've done our program said it's the first time, you know, in 30 years they had an honest election. And it's just by finding all the little dumb stuff, you know, stacks of blank ballots that people are helping themselves to, that kind of thing. So we were able to cover Detroit. Detroit has 500 precincts. We couldn't get to all of them, but we got to a lot of them because our monitors could make a circuit in the same general area. Our monitors covered the main absentee count board in the TCF Center, the notorious place where the GOP sent in untrained idiots who tried to crash in. And I'm very proud of our monitors because they stood up as witnesses to what the GOP thugs were doing. And they actually reported them. And we got a lot of them thrown out because they were violating the challenger law in Michigan, which says very clearly what you can't do. So that was really successful. And our people were ready to come testify if anyone were to claim there was fraud when there wasn't. In fact, the TCF Center was better run than it's ever been. It was spectacularly effective.
What is TCF?
It used to be Detroit's famous sports center and so forth. Yeah, and it was renamed for a new sponsor, the bank.
Okay. But you did have voting in the arenas this time also. How did that work out?
No, the arena was entirely for early absentee voting. That was what that was about. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. No. We don't have giant voting centers and probably never will. It doesn't work very well for us.
Okay. So listen, you mentioned gerrymandering, but I want to do that next week. Can you come back again next week? and well, talk about the gerrymandering.
I can talk really about important. It, but it's already happening, and we're waiting for the data from the census so that our brand new redistricting commission can get started. We won't
well,
really.
Listen, I want to talk about that in great detail next
yep,
week because
yep.
of the ongoing fascist coup. People are going to want to get to that, but that what you did in and we'll have a special session next week on gerrymandering and what you did in Michigan. It's incredibly important. I mean, it's a huge victory, and it's at the core of what we're doing, and can change American politics and voting. So let's do a whole session on that next week. Okay, Jan, can we get you to come back?
Absolutely, but I would recommend the voter reforms as well. I mean, you've got to have universal voter registration. You've got to have everybody having the opportunity for absentee voting. You've got to have election day registration. Otherwise, voter suppression will run rampant.
We're 100% with you on that. I hope everyone will take notice. We're going to go deep into that next week because it's
Harvey. We have questions.
Ongoing work.
Stephen has a question, and Laura.
Steve Rosenfeld. Yeah. Steve Rosenfeld is one of our leading reporters, for those of you who don't know, on election protection. Steve, what you got?
Well, I just want to very quickly sort of build on what, make one point based on what Andrea and Janice just told us. You know, there's so many details around here, and there's so much disinformation. It's hard to maintain really basic bottom line focuses. And all this turnout work that Jan just mentioned, which is when she talks about the voting rules, the voting reforms, instead of necessarily saying voting rights, what we're really talking about here is access to the ballot. And I just want people to remember that phrase. It's not a phrase I made up. Martin Luther King in 1957, the Lincoln Memorial, gave a famous speech where he said access to the ballot will give us basically fill in the blanks and look at what's happened in Georgia.
Stephen, do you have a question?
Well, look, go ahead, Steve. Just let Steve finish. We'll get a question and then we have to go to New York. So Steve, real quick.
Point to make to people, as we're hearing about all the disinformation from the other side, at the root of their grievances and all the false claims about this election is the simple fact that ballot access was expanded during the pandemic. You look at all this, what the states did and all the pushback by all the Republican lawsuits and all those court decisions that got thrown out, they surrounded expanded access to the ballot. So just keep that in mind. That's all I have to say, because it's a very clarifying principle. It's not unique to me. It starts with Dr. King, 1957, Lincoln Memorial.
Okay, very good point. And again, Steve, where is your reporting? It's a voting booth, right?
Well, I'm hopefully BillMoyers.com will have a piece on this tomorrow. Where most
of watch Steve is Rosenfeld's reporting. It's really extraordinary. And ballot access, you're 100% right. There was somebody who had a question, then we're going to
Jan, three questions, and that is, could you just tell us what the initiative said that won, and number two is, are you trying to tell us that Wayne County and the surrounding Collier counties didn't transmit their votes on election night wirelessly? Is that what you're trying to say? And number three is the TCF was a huge issue for the Trumpers. They brought out all sorts of fraud that happened there. I didn't see where anybody was pushing back on any of that. Maybe you could just talk to that a little bit more. Oh, thank you.
Okay, Jan, real quick.
Well, the initiative language for Proposal 3, you can find on Ballotpedia. It was a Christmas tree of voting rights that we've been trying to get through the legislature for 15 years. So we finally just slammed them all at one time. That's available if you want to look at it, as is our redistricting initiative, which was Proposal 2. As far as the TCF, there were lies galore, and all of them were full of it. And our people, our monitor people were standing by, and they've all provided firsthand accounts of what the the lies were and what actually was going on. And TCF was very well organized. They had high-speed counters going. They had very, very well-trained staff. They had been rehearsing this whole operation for almost a month, led by a very, very esteemed individual, Michigan's former Bureau of Elections director. None of their stuff held any water, but there was no forum for us to be able to counter the lies.
This is a good forum for it.
Well, I'm talking about a forum where the press would be reporting the judges and all the court cases didn't let it get that far. And so other than the one hearing in front of the Michigan legislature, which they didn't let anybody in who wanted to tell the truth, there was one Michigan election administrator, my friend Tina in Oakland County, and she's a Republican, and she was really angry about all these lies. So there was one. That was it.
Listen, thank you for that. We're going to go back to Michigan next week as well. We're going to go into deeper detail. I really want to go into detail on the gerrymandering and the other stuff that was on the ballot that we won. And this is going to change Michigan politics. I will point out that the margin in Wisconsin was about 20,000. And Pennsylvania, it was, 20,000, 30,000. But in Michigan, it was 150,000 or thereabouts. And that's because of the work you did. So next week, a deeper detail for Michigan. I wish we could do it now, but we're going to move to New York now because we have an ongoing development that's very, very important that we can do something about in the next day or two.
Hey, Harvey?
Yes, Joel?
Yeah. First of all, thank you, Andrea, for helping to save America from fascism. But
yes, and Emily and Christian everybody. as well as Jan.
And also thank you, Harvey, for bringing us all together for all these months. But Ray McClendon was going to be on the call. So this is a very important development. So the Republicans in the Georgia General Assembly are going to introduce legislation to outlaw voting by mail. This is very, very serious because what we're seeing is, fascism, whether it's being played out in front of the U.S. Capitol, we're now in the Georgia Assembly, so we're going to have to collectively fight this because the paradigm of siloed organizing around election protection is not going to protect the people of Georgia. We're going to have to really have a very serious discussion about how do those of us who are not in Georgia be in solidarity with those who are in Georgia. So this means if you're a senior citizen or you're, learning disabled or physically or mentally disabled and you can't vote, the Republicans are going to say, you can't vote by mail. And this, I believe, will happen. There'll be a boomerang effect. I think it's going to happen across the country.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very well stated and extremely important. And we're going to go into deeper detail on that next week as well. There's a huge, I think what happened is that certain elements in Georgia don't like how the election turned out, and they want to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And so banning vote by mail is a big, big, big deal, as we all know. Thank you for that, Joel. And thank you, everybody, for these successes in Georgia and Michigan. And we're going to go into deeper detail on that next week as well. It will be at 5:00 on Monday. I do want to say goodbye. Everybody listening from PRN, the hour is over. We are going to continue with this discussion. We're going to get into the ongoing fascist coup after we talk about what's going on in New York State. So my listeners at Progressive Radio Network, if you want to continue with this Zoom call, go to electionprotection2024.org and get the link. electionprotection2024.org, get the link. We are going to continue on now, but it was great to have you this week. Much appreciated. Thank you to the crew in New York. We're joined by Lulu Friestadt. Lulu is one of the truly great election protection activists in America. We're also joined, by the way, by Tatanka Bricka. And I want to talk to you, Tatanka, later when Lulu is done about the role of the indigenous in organizing in Georgia. That's a big part of it. And I'm glad you're with us. Lulu Friestadt, can you tell us, give us your organization, how to get onto your calls, and tell us what we need to do in Georgia immediately. Lulu, you're on mute. Are you unmuted?
Okay. Yeah, it's okay. I figured it out. So,
okay, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Lulu Freistad. I'm the executive director of Smart Elections. Pleasure to be on the call with people that I respect so much. Jan and Andrea are both heroes to me. And I want to just talk to you about what's happening in New York right now. There is a battle about a voting machine that is particularly problematic. It's called the Express Vote XL. My guess is that many of the people on this call already know about it. It's what's called a hybrid voting machine, and it combines a scanner and a printer in one. Whereas we used to have ballot marking devices for voters with disabilities where it would print out the ballot, and then the voter would take that ballot over to a scanner and scan it. Now they've combined that operation into one machine. And the reason why security experts say that it's extremely problematic is because, kind of think of it like a car, like those self-driving cars where they don't really need the driver anymore. If you have a voting machine and it can print and it can scan and it can tabulate, it doesn't need you anymore. It can do whatever it wants.
So, are you saying the voting machine can vote for itself?
It can, basically. By that time, it can do whatever it wants. It can select your candidate, it can print your candidate, and it can tabulate your candidate. It does not need you. And that is what security experts are indicating, that it's an extremely problematic design. And so we've been pointing this out, some interesting develops. The most urgent thing is that the machine is about to be certified, quite possibly, in New York on Thursday. There's a meeting Thursday morning at 10 a.m. and the Board of Elections has indicated that it's quite possible that they're going to vote to certify it. And so we've organized a letter writing campaign. We really, really want people to send these letters. We've set it up to make it easy for you. Like in 3 minutes, you will be able to email all of the election officials in New York State and all of the state legislators. So it's hundreds of people. It's like over 200 people that you can reach in 3 minutes. And we've already flooded them. In 24 hours, we sent them almost 150 letters. So we want by the end of today to send them 300. We just want just keep getting this into their inbox so they can't think about anything else and they understand this is a huge problem. You can write to them whether you're in New York or not. If you're in New York, obviously it's a concern. If you're outside of New York, you can say quite legitimately that New York has traditionally been considered a state with fairly good election security. We have been voting with hand-marked paper ballots that we use scanners for 10 years. And then we do audits, a 3% mandatory audit of all the machines. So we have definitely not perfect standards, but higher than in many parts of the country. And this will significantly deteriorate the election security and the ability for voters to have confidence. And people like Professor Andrew Appel at Princeton have confirmed that. He wrote a blog post today specifically saying how this will deteriorate the election security and the confidence level. So you can say, as somebody outside of New York, that you're very worried if New York lowers its standards, that other states around the country will follow suit. And they will. That's absolutely true. They will. So please, I'm going to go ahead and put this letter into the chat. And I hope that you will send it immediately. It literally will take you 3 minutes. I timed my husband last night sending it, and he had it off within 3 minutes. You can take longer if you want. It pre-populates the letter for you, but you can change it, change the subject, write whatever you want. Let them know that you passionately oppose these voting machines. And then in terms of helping us actually fight them, there's some really interesting things going on. You can speak on Thursday morning. The meeting is at 10 a.m. and it's a public comment period. And so if you want to actually make a statement, you just include in your letter when you send it, I want to speak at the public meeting. And this is going to the email address where they're keeping track of who's requested to speak. And I'll put that information directly into the chat as well. So if you don't even want to bother with our letter, you just want to email them and say, I want to speak. This is the information. I'm putting that into the chat. The email address is election_ops@elections.ny.gov. And we would like this meeting to be filled with people talking about what a problem this voting machine is. But I'm going to talk to you specifically about what it's helpful to say more than other things, because it turns out there's a whole legal strategy involved here. So those requests to speak, and preferably your comments need to be into the board and to the legislative officials by tomorrow, Tuesday at 5 p.m. That's the deadline to request to speak is tomorrow at 5 p.m. So here's what we found out about the process. One of the things that one of the commissioners, the New York co-chair, Douglas Kellner, has said to us is that this is about the legal process, not about whether or not it's a good voting machine or a bad voting machine. And the board has very little leeway that unless the machine technically violates a provision of the New York statutes, they have to certify it. And I was kind of dubious about that, but I wrote to Doug Jones, and many of you may know Doug Jones is an academic at the University of Iowa, a longtime advocate for election security. He co-wrote a book with Barbara Simons, who started Verified Voting. So Doug Jones was the person who was primarily responsible for writing the election code in New York at the time. Not completely, but he wrote a lot of it. And I wrote Doug and I said, hey, is this true? Like, first off, is there anything in the law to protect us? Like, is there anything in there legally that will help us against this Express Vote Excel? And is that true that they have to certify it, even if it's bad, if it doesn't violate the specific law? And Doug basically said, yeah. He said, that's kind of the truth. And he said they had that same problem in Iowa. They had to certify the Dominion, even though they hated it and knew it was a terrible voting machine. So these are really, really problematic structures. The way that our laws are structured is something that we have to start thinking about, that we need to change. Like we need something in the statutes, either federally or in all the states, that says something like, if a board of elections determines that a voting machine is just bad and not good for the public, they can not certify it. These are kind of basic protections that we need to get into the law. So that's a kind of long-term project. In the meantime, there are ways in which the machine may not meet the law, and we need to find those, and we need to present those to the board at the meeting on Thursday. And luckily, Douglas Kellner gave us some insight into where to look. There were security reports that were done by the lab that they hired. They hired two labs, but the ones that he told us to look at, the lab report, company is called SLI. And I'm going to go ahead and put this email that Doug sent into the chat. And he told us where,
So we're going to get three questions for you.
Okay, can I just, Levine, let me just get this in. Let me just get this into the chat, Harvey, and then I'm happy to take questions.
Okay, good. And then we're going to move on to the fascist coup here.
Okay, I understand that people have a lot on their plate, but I will say that if we let these voting machines go through, it doesn't matter how many people you get to vote. You can swamp the voter registration. You know, you can flood the polls. If the machines are set up and programmed against you, it is going to be very, very hard to win. So this is what
in New York now, I mean, it has problems, but it's not so bad. Is that right?
We already have one hybrid that they passed in New York, which is already a huge problem. In 15 counties, they have a bad voting machine that security experts say is vulnerable to hacking and could not be detected. Now they're in the process of certifying another one. At that point, New York City is going to buy that machine super fast. They've already indicated they want to. You're going to have 4.5 million New York voters voting on this Express Vote Excel probably within a year. So this is a very, very serious problem.
Terrible.
And anybody who would like to help with this, we're going to be going through these documents tonight. You can just put your email into the chat and I'll reach out to you. So Doug sent us the link to these documents. They're on the website. They're the security reports. And he indicated where there might be problems with them. And we have some other information also, like from Andrew Appel, of problems that we're going to be going through and looking at. So I would welcome any help with that tonight.
Okay. And we'll need a report from you next week. Obviously, we need a hand count of paper ballots in New York. Art Levine, Michelle, and then Ruth Strauss, real quickly, because we want to get to the coup. Give us another 5 minutes. Lulu, that's an amazing report. And it's a desperate situation. So let's try and stop
Lulu, this is a very obvious question, but the New York Times did its front page piece about Northampton and its failures. Whether or not it was an Excel that failed so spectacularly in Northampton and raise questions about ballot marking vices, that reporter, based on all the experts that you've gathered, might very well be interested. And you are, the other thing is, you have partnered with Common Cause New York, but in particular, Disability Rights New York. And the issue of the disability inaccessibility was developed at great length by Rich Gorella of Protect Our Votes. This is the worst machine possible for people with disabilities. And there's a lot of evidence to that effect in Pennsylvania. And that element of disability could be disallowing. And I just think with your partners of Common Cause New York, you also have to be paying some attention to strategizing the Times or other influential publications to pay some attention quickly. And there also is people in Bloomberg and AP and others who paid attention to BMDs before, and this could be a new thing for them to try to sell them on. It would help considerably.
That's great information, Art. You and Lou need to be in touch to get this done. That's why we do these calls. Very, very important. Great stuff. Thank you. Michelle, Monaco, and then Ruth Strauss. Michelle, are you there? Or Ruth, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, go ahead, Ruth, and then Michelle.
I'm assuming, Lulu, that, of course, like everything else, the software is quote-unquote proprietary, and therefore you all can't know that, number one. Lulu, are you still there?
Well, you're muted for some reason. Lulu is muted for some reason.
All right, yes, Ruth, you're absolutely right. The software is proprietary.
God, and that's unbelievable. Okay, go ahead, Ruth. And is Michelle Monaco unmuted? Did you have another piece, Ruth? Okay, I think we're good. Lulu, again?
Just one quick one. That's legal, Lulu, to have it proprietary?
Yeah, there's no voting machines that I know of in the
last
country.
Last question. Is there any way to verify this vote or no?
If the machine counts the barcode, you don't know what it's printed. It's counting the barcode unless you can read barcode, and the barcode itself is usually proprietary. Also, I am going to put our link in the chat. We have a forum tomorrow night, 7 p.m., and we're going to be going over this in detail. And we also have a guest, Jennifer Ahern, from the Washington organization to talk to us about H.R. 1 that's been introduced in the House and the Senate. We're going to be going over H.R. 1. So that's tomorrow night, 7 p.m. on YouTube and Facebook. And I'll put that's our election protection forum. And I'll put that in the chat. I do encourage you to come to that. We usually have a lot of information there for you. Thanks so much, Harvey.
Oh, you've been great. Thank you. Thank you for that. We'll end with a short note. I just got emailed in the days after the assault on the Capitol, Fox News's ratings had the biggest tank in 20 years, just dropped through the floor. Somebody's paying attention. Listen, you guys, this was magnificent. Thank you, Mike Hirsch. Thank you, Steve Caruso, Bob Fitrakis, Joel Siegel, the co-conveners. What an incredible group of people, more than 75 people for 90 minutes. It's mind-boggling. This was the 35th. Next week will be the double high, 36. It will be magical, and we will go back to Michigan, back to Georgia, and we'll have a lot to report on what's going on. That'll be the last one before the inauguration. Again, thank you, everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Harvey.
You know we're